This is the Poison Terminator podcast. My name is Carlo De Olim. In this episode, we will be talking about methylmercury. Methylmercury is a substance present in fish and seafood that can induce health effects if ingested in a certain amount. My guest today is Dr. Nicholas Fisher. Dr. Fisher is a distinguished professor in the School of Marine and Atmospheric Sciences of Stony Brook University. Dr. Fisher is also the director of the Consortium for Interdisciplinary Environmental Research at Stony Brook University. Dr. Fisher has a bachelor's degree and PhD in biology. Welcome to the show, Dr. Fisher.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Dr. Fisher, should we stop eating fish and seafood since it contains methylmercury, which can be toxic?
The short answer to that question is no. In fact, eating seafood is generally a healthy thing to do. But one should choose their seafood wisely. It turns out that all seafood has, to some extent, a certain amount of methylmercury in it, primarily in the protein or muscle tissue of fish or other types of seafood. But some types of seafood have much higher concentrations of methylmercury than others. So consuming the fish that have very high concentrations of methylmercury, it can be problematic if you consume a lot of them. And it can also be particularly problematic for women of childbearing age or small children, because the methylmercury can interfere with nerve function and brain formation in fetuses or young children.
Which type of fish and seafood contains the highest levels?
So there are a number of types that do. Some types of tuna have particularly high levels of methylmercury. This would include bluefin tuna in particular, but other types as well, such as albacore, can have pretty high levels of methylmercury. Other types of tuna have less so, such as skipjack tuna. Then there are sharks. Some people eat shark, and sharks have very high levels of mercury as a rule. Swordfish have high levels of methylmercury. And then there are other fish that are not consumed as much, such as tilefish, which can have pretty high levels of methylmercury as well. But tuna provide the largest supply of methylmercury to human consumers of seafood. So in the United States, people get about 40 to 50% of, it's an estimate, but they get 40 to 50% of their methylmercury just from consumption of tuna.
Are the fish bought from the supermarket safer to consume than fish caught by family or friends?
No. No, it makes no difference.
No difference?
Correct.
Are there ways to know the levels of mercury in fish sold at the supermarket or when we go fishing?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Are there ways to determine if it's contaminated? Is that what you're asking?
I'm asking if there's a way to know the levels of mercury in fish.
When you go fishing, no. No, but
when you go at the supermarket.
But you can, no, you can't, but you can assume, based on many thousands of measurements that have been made already, that certain types of fish have very high levels of methylmercury, such as swordfish and certain types of tuna and shark. So you can assume that the levels are going to be very high, but until you actually measure them, you will not know for certain.
Is farm fish safer?
It turns out that farm fish have lower levels, quite a bit lower levels of mercury than wild fish. But that's not true for other types of contaminants, but for mercury, it is true. So farm fish can have significantly lower levels of mercury. Now, there's still much more work to be done on that issue, but the measurements that have been made thus far suggest that wild fish typically have higher levels of mercury, much higher.
How does methylmercury gets in fish and seafood?
Okay, so this is a bit of a complicated story. When mercury is released by industry or by burning of coal or increasingly by artisanal gold mining in different areas around the world, it enters the marine environment or aquatic environments in general in the form of inorganic mercury. And that inorganic mercury then can get methylated by naturally occurring bacteria that live in aquatic environments, both marine and freshwater environments. And these bacteria convert the inorganic mercury to methylmercury and then release it out into the surrounding water. The methylmercury is picked up by phytoplankton, which are single-celled plant cells. They are algae that are picked up out of the water and concentrated usually more than 100,000-fold out of the water. So these phytoplankton cells are highly enriched in mercury, both inorganic and methylmercury. Then small animals called zooplankton eat the phytoplankton, and the zooplankton assimilate almost all of the methylmercury that they ingest. They don't assimilate the inorganic mercury very efficiently, but they do assimilate almost all of the methylmercury. Then when the zooplankton are eaten by small fish, for example, or other marine animals, that methylmercury is passed on to those fish. And methylmercury is assimilated with a very high efficiency throughout the food chain. And furthermore, it's not lost from the fish at a rapid rate at all. So virtually all of the methylmercury that enters into the fish is retained by the fish. It's not lost efficiently at all. So it's basically remains in the fish. So slow-growing fish that live a long time tend to have very high concentrations of mercury, particularly fish that are higher up in the food chain, such as tuna and shark and swordfish. And so you get what's called a biomagnification, where the levels of methylmercury are higher in the tissues of the predator than in the tissues of the prey.
Can you say that methylmercury is a toxic form of mercury?
Yes. So both forms of mercury are toxic, but methylmercury tends to be a bigger problem for people and for many other animals, such as many mammals, than inorganic mercury. That is partly because people retain the methylmercury to a greater extent than the inorganic mercury, so we can excrete the inorganic mercury very efficiently or more efficiently, whereas the methylmercury stays in our body for a longer period of time. It's been estimated that the biological half-life of methylmercury in human beings is on the order of 2 months, about 60 days. Furthermore, the methylmercury can cross the blood-brain barrier and can enter into the brain of people and can interfere with nerve function. Methylmercury interferes with neurological activity in general in animals. And so once it gets into the brain of people, it can cause greater damage. So the longer retention of the methylmercury and the fact that it can get into the brain tissue of people combine to make it of make it a public health concern.
You have just talked about the neurological effects of methylmercury. Can you talk about also the other effects that methylmercury can have when we're poisoned?
Well, some of the other effects are not as well known, but most of the known effects are associated with impairment of nerve function. So people who have very high levels of methylmercury in their bodies can have impairment of nervous coordination, the ability to walk, for example. They have problems with sleeping. They have tremors. But mercury and methylmercury, to our knowledge, has no effect on cancer, for example. There are some reports that it can impair or interfere with heart function, but I think I'm not sure how compelling those data are at this time, so there's more work to be done on that. But I think the work that has been done certainly points to the nerve neurological impairment as probably the first and most prominent impact on people.
Who is most sensitive to the toxic effects of methylmercury?
Well, as I understand it, and I'm not a physician, but my understanding of methylmercury toxicology is that developing fetuses are the most subject to serious effects. And so the concern is that if a woman is either of childbearing age or is pregnant and has a lot of mercury, that gets passed to the fetus and it can interfere with healthy brain formation in the fetus. And this has been shown in particularly in a place called Minamata, Japan. This occurred in the 1950s and early 1960s, where there was a community that was exposed to extremely high levels of methylmercury, much higher than almost anywhere else. And those people there were deaths that resulted, and there were terrible impairments. People were malformed when they were born, and they were unable to live a healthy life. This was probably the single worst case of marine pollution in recorded history, at least as far as I know. So that is what first brought methylmercury to the attention of the rest of the world. And since then, it's been recognized that it can be a problem elsewhere, but not to the same extent as occurred in Minamata Bay in Japan.
How is it diagnosed?
It's actually very easy. You can measure mercury in the blood. It's a very simple, inexpensive test. When you go to give blood, for example, for lipid content like cholesterol, that sort of thing, you just need a very small amount of blood, which can then undergo mercury analysis as well to see if people have elevated levels of mercury. So that's the most common way, but mercury is also put by animals into hair and in fingernails and toenails. So you can also analyze hair, let's say from your scalp or fingernails or toenails, and measure mercury in that material as well. But the most standard way of analyzing for mercury contamination in people is by looking at blood.
And if we cease the exposure to methylmercury, does it stop the symptoms?
So the symptoms, if someone has very high levels of methylmercury, the first just by knowing that you have high levels of methylmercury does not stop the methylmercury from affecting you. So you have to allow the body to cleanse itself of the methylmercury over time. So the presuming that the levels are quite high but not not life-threatening, then it seems to me the most appropriate action to be taken is to stop consuming seafood, because we get 95% of our methylmercury from seafood, 40 to 50% just from tuna, but overall we get virtually all of our methylmercury from seafood. So by stopping seafood consumption, the methylmercury will go down by about half within 2 months.
Do you know the regions that have fish with the lowest level of methylmercury?
The regions, you mean geographic regions?
In North America.
Well, for example, in the United States, all 50 states have had fish advisories regarding mercury. So there's no area that is immune from high levels of mercury. And seafood is universally contaminated with methylmercury, but most seafood has methylmercury at levels that are low enough that they're probably not a problem. But as I mentioned, there are certain types of seafood that have very high levels, and they should not be consumed in large quantities, particularly by women of childbearing age.
Can a daily intake of fish oil supplements induce methylmercury poisoning?
Not that I am aware of, no, because the methylmercury is not in the fish oil.
Is it true that deep frying fish increases mercury levels?
Is it true that what?
That deep frying fish increases?
No.
No?
Okay. No, it has no impact.
Can you talk about the outreach activities about methylmercury poisoning done by Stony Brook University?
Sure. So we have had grand rounds in medical schools where we speak to physicians to make them aware of this, because very often they're not informed about such matters during their education in medical schools, at least in the United States. We interact with some local supermarkets that sell fish to inform seafood buyers that which fish are have higher levels of mercury. We've communicated that information in a series of brochures, both online and to other institutions. We've met with dietitians, professional dietitians who prepare diets for all kinds of individuals, including patients in hospitals, and make them aware of which fish are safer than other fish. We meet with school groups sometimes, high school groups. That's an example of the groups that we've met with. Oh, we've also had an exhibit in a large aquarium in Long Beach, California. That's a permanent exhibit to make people aware. These are aimed at younger children and their parents to make them aware of this issue. We try not to scare people, and we don't think it's necessary to scare people. For the most part, eating seafood is a healthy thing to do. It's just that some seafoods, people should be aware that some seafoods have particularly high levels of methylmercury, and if they're in the sensitive group, such as women of childbearing age or pregnant, or they very little children, the amount of seafood that the amount of the potentially dangerous seafood that they consume should be limited.
Why did you choose to do research on methylmercury?
Yeah, so it's been recognized that methylmercury is a problem for a long time. I have focused on the interactions of metals with marine organisms in general and marine pollution. I teach courses on marine pollution to graduate students as well as undergraduate students. And I've published many papers on metal contamination in general. And so this was a natural extension of the work I had been doing with other metals. And in addition, I was approached by a wealthy individual who had methylmercury poisoning from eating too much of the wrong kind of seafood. And he was concerned enough that he wanted to fund some additional work on this topic. And so he provided my research group with some funding to further explore it and publicize it to the public and also to the medical community.
Dr. Fisher, I want to thank you for being on the show today and empowering us to take an active role in the prevention of harmful exposures.
You're very welcome.
That was Dr. Fisher, Distinguished Professor in the School of Marine and Atmospheric Sciences of Stony Brook University. That's all for today. I'm the Poison Terminator. I'll be back next week with another episode. Have a great day.